Hey, before we get started, I just wanted to say thanks to our longtime sponsors, Aureus Medical Staffing, helping you, physical therapists or physical therapist assistants, find jobs all over this country with positions in all settings in all 50 states. Find out what they have for you at AUREUSmedical.com. That is AUREUSmedical.com.
Make sure to follow us online
at PT Pintcast and
subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts.
I absolutely love
it. I love you, love you, love you.
It's awesome.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome as we do a little bit of a liquid lunch here, doing an episode in the middle of the day. Welcome to PT Pintcast. It's a podcast that saves physical therapists from missing out on amazing insight, remarkable ideas, and motivational stories here in the world of physical therapy. I'm Jim McKay. I'll be your host. We're broadcasting live from the Aureus Medical Staffing Studio, also known as my bedroom. We'll call it a studio. It sounds fancier when we do that. Check them out online at AUREUSmedical.com. Leaders in hashtag travel physical therapy. Let your PT license take you where you want to go. You want to be a PT in all different settings, all different places. Settings and positions available in all 50 states plus Washington, D.C. Again, AUREUSmedical.com. Great show for you today. We've got an incredible story of an injured Green Beret's return to battle. I got the book. You should get it too. It's right here. It feels legit. It's got a legit story inside. Be careful with this book. It'll open your eyes. It's called Tip of the Spear. Ryan Hendrickson is going to join us in just a second. We want to welcome him to the program. First, we got to say thanks to who hooked us up and one of the sponsors of the show, Johnny Owens and the team from Owens Recovery Science. Single source for PTs looking for certification and personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training, and the equipment and the clinical practice and the research to apply it properly in your clinical practice with your patients. Let's get the cool serious music in here. Here we go. Yeah, let's bring them in right now. Service member, author, current Green Beret right now, Ryan Hendrickson is coming into the studio. Ryan, welcome to the show, my man.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being on here.
Cheers to you. I like to make sure we always say thank you for your service with anybody who is in the armed service. So thank you for your service.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
I feel like I got to say it three times because I want to open up. You've got a really interesting background. You served in three branches of the U.S. Armed Services. Tell us about that. That's a little unique.
Yeah, it's unique. I guess you can say it like that. So I growing up in a small town in Oregon, my dad basically when I graduated high school, my dad, you know, he gave me a few options. You can go out to the workforce, you can go to college, but let's face it, you're not really college material. And I was like, yeah, you're right, good point. Or, you know, you can join the military. I highly recommend you join the military. Serve your country, do 4 years, come back, and then figure out what you want to do with your life. Okay. So the Navy, that was the first thing hopping. Recruiter got me with the normal things. You wanna be a Navy SEAL like Charlie Sheen? He's like, yep. You wanna be a F-14 Tomcat pilot like Tom Cruise? Yeah. Sign here. Like, you got it. None of that happened. But joined the Navy. Did 4 years in the Navy, got out, and tried my hand at civilian life, and just, you know, I'm not really a civilian-minded kind of guy. So ended up joining the Air Force and had a blast, great career in the ammo career field, so love my ammo troops. But it just, there was still something missing. There was a sense of being on the front lines, knowing what it's like for, I guess, someone to shoot at you. And I wanted to find out. So I switched over to the Army and became a Green Beret. That was 14 months of training. And deployed to Afghanistan shortly after. And within 3 days in Afghanistan, figured out what it was like to have someone shoot at you. And pretty addicting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, your book, I want to make sure everybody knows, it's called Tip of the Spear. I mean, the book jacket alone, I left this around my house and I'm living with my brother right now. And I just want to read a little bit from the pages in the back. 5 minutes or so after stepping on the IED, I knew I was hanging on for dear life. I could feel myself slipping away. I heard many say that your life flashes before your eyes just before you go, but that wasn't happening. I didn't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. And my brother was in the United States Navy. He talked about, you know, picturing what would happen next, what your family and what the public would see. You talked about that Army photo, the death photo, the death photo as they're known. My brother picked this up. He said, yeah, that's what they tell us when they're taking that picture, is make sure you smile because that's the thing they print. I mean, man, all this is going through your mind. So I love the book, first of all. So thank you for writing it. I'm amazed when I actually read a book. So never mind, you wrote a book and had a really interesting story. And that really came from something your dad said, which is you got an empty book, right? So what do you want to put on the pages of your life? And that really was the first, I'd say, third of this book, was you trying to figure out where you fit in this world. Talk about where you grew up, and you added a lot about your family. I feel like the first third of the book was a lot of this and that and this and that. But I'm guessing it felt like that. It read like that because that's what your life was like.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely. You know, you start off with there's two things in life you don't control. You don't control life and you don't control death. Everything in between, they're blank pages, and you do have control over that. And so my dad had also told me about the what ifs and how dangerous what ifs were. And if, you know, as far as the two old men sitting on the porch and one guy is miserable because he had let life pass him by and he never took a chance. He never failed. He never got out of his comfort zone. He always just stayed in his comfort zone. And now that he's, you know, older, he's just sitting there and I wish I would have done this. I wish I would have done that. What if I would have stepped out? And then there's the other old man who, you know, he failed a lot and he succeeded a lot and he saw the world and he did everything there was to do. And he has no what ifs. He has no I wish I would have. So he just sits back and he remembers the life that he lived and he's content. And so he said, you know, which old man do you want to be? And that stuck with me for, well, I mean, almost 42 years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that comes across in the book. And you talk about failure. You talk about trying different things and going through the process to become a Navy SEAL. And then you're really open with, hey, I didn't make it. I couldn't figure out why. And you're open with the different paths that your life what you were going through your mind while you were taking these different paths. And I think ultimately that's a great lesson because, you know, on our phones, we look at this highlight reel of everybody's success, success, success. Ryan, you're Green Beret right now, but to get there was a really difficult path. Took a lot of twists and turns. Talk a little bit about becoming a Green Beret. You say, it was just 14 months of training. It's really easy to sum it up there. But that 14 months, it was not a walk in the park.
No, it was not. So I did. I failed a lot. And I guess part of my story in my book was I used to use my failures as a victim mindset, like, you know, poor me, or, you know, it's everybody else's fault but my own. And, but I needed a victory. Like I needed you know, something under my belt. And the Q course, and training selection Q course, it happened at, all I can really say is God's perfect timing. I mean, tell you the truth, because I was at a point in my life where I needed a W, and there was, I didn't care what it took. And for me, I was coming from the Air Force, so I didn't have the infantry background. I didn't have the Ranger background or nothing like that. And so the Q course was completely, selection in the Q course for me was a complete eye opener. But every time I would pass a phase and succeed, it just kept building up my confidence and building up my confidence. And I needed that W, but it actually took me getting blown up to realize that you don't really fail unless you feel like, unless you adopt the victimization mentality that you're a failure. You don't really fail. You just, there's different paths. that path wasn't right. And now you learned that it wasn't, and now you're moving on to another path. And it took me, well, like I said, getting blown up and slowly but surely getting out of the victimization mindset about the poor me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You pulled that well. Two things stuck with me. What you just said, the exact phrasing is actually one of my former baseball coaches. You know, if you're in a slump, you just need a W. And some people don't understand what that means, but it's like, if you're just going through and you're getting your ass kicked, you just need one little thing to go right. And that's when you really start to kind of step out of yourself and say, okay, I can control just one thing here. What can I control? You know, maybe I'm going to get up a little earlier. I'm going to make my bed. Like, you just need a W. You need a couple things to go your way. And the other was, when you were going through training, you talked about tying yourself to a competitor. And my swim coach used to tell me to do the exact same thing, which was, you don't have to beat everybody here. You just got to look for one guy who's a little bit faster, one girl's a little bit better, and just say, I'm going to tie myself to you, and I'm not just going to stay with you. I'm eventually going to pass you. You really got to play little games like that and have a good mentality, I'm guessing, when you go through training like this to become a Green Beret.
Yeah. I mean, I had a mentality that I've heard some people, they don't necessarily agree with it, but as people would quit, I would feed off that weakness. Is I'm still here, and we're in a training environment. I would never do that. You know, that's not a combat mentality, because you make it through training, you're not going to quit in combat. But as people would quit, or the training was too tough, I would get strength from that. And I mean, it's a controlled environment. So I'm not really, you know, I don't really feel bad about it.
Here's the mentality. You mentioned a second ago, you didn't come from an infantry background, so you knew you were outgunned in that sense. Didn't have the hands-on weapons training. Other people had experience, so you literally took this mindset of, I'm going to outwork you. The one thing I got is I'm going to outwork you. It's going to be my mental game. And you talked about in the book Tip of the Spear, that is a big aspect. There are a lot of people who are physically strong, who have the experience, but it is a mental training. And we'll get to a really good example coming up. But in the book, it really, you know, begins and ends with the incident that changed you. So let's talk about that incident with an explosion that really changed your life.
Yeah. So I had made it through training and everything like that. And within a few months of graduating, we were on our way to Afghanistan. And, you know, so I was getting everything that I wanted, the whole reason why I came into SF. And, but, you know, I still had my struggles and everything like that. But, we started off on our mission on September 11th, 2010. And, then through the night came, you know, September 12th, and we were clearing through these compounds, and we got in a predicament where we were trying to get our, Afghan counterparts to go into a certain set of compounds, and they were, no, we're not moving. And so, you know, our interpreter went up to the main breach point, and I went up to get him away from the main breach point, and essentially stepped on the IED, pulling him out of the, I'll just call it a doorway for the viewers. But stepped on an IED, and I couldn't quite figure out what happened. I didn't know if I hit it, because it didn't hurt, and it didn't look like the movies, and it didn't sound like the movies. But I remember I couldn't breathe. I was the dust cloud in the ammonia from the homemade explosives. And I remember thinking, like, I gotta get fresh air. I'm going to suffocate in here. But I kept trying to stand up, and I couldn't. So I was getting pissed. I was like, why can't I stand up? What is going on here? And so, you know, obviously my first instinct was to get my weapon system and get it towards the unknown, which was the doorway. And then I'm laying there, and I'm kind of like halfway sat up, because all my body armor and the backpack I had on and everything like that. And as the dust slowly started to settle, I looked down, and my boot was off of my leg. And I don't remember taking my boot off. And then as the dust cleared a little bit more, I saw these, like, the whitest objects that I've ever seen in my life. And there were two pearly white, like, I don't even think pearly white really explains it, but they were sticking out of my leg. And I was like, that doesn't look right. So I grabbed behind my knee and I pulled my leg up to see what it was, and my boot flopped off. And I was like, oh, that's my leg. So, yeah, pretty much I had Halloween costumes for the rest of my life. Pirate. That was going to be me. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So your job in your team and your role in Special Forces within your unit was 18C? It was 18 Charlie? Is that the designation?
Your
ordnance? So you're the guy who's – you took on a pretty big role in your team, which was, you know, making sure other members, and you were securing your interpreter there in that situation. But your goal was to go out and destroy or identify and destroy IEDs and explosives.
Yeah. It was, I mean, as an 18 Charlie, you have a mine detector and you're clearing the route for your counterparts. So oftentimes you'll have a couple Afghans up there with you also. I've been on multiple missions where I've ended up in the front and it's like, oh, this is a little predicament here, but, you're clearing the path for your counterparts behind you. Because if one of your teammates hits an IED, that's on you.
Right.
You missed it. Yeah.
So in that situation, Sorry, Ron. So you were laying there. You had just assessed the fact that that's actually what this is. You have an intimate knowledge of these explosives. That's what I wanted to kind of bring in. So once you're trying to get your bearings, you realize, oh man, I'm hit. This isn't like the movies. what happens next?
So when I was laying there, and after the dust cloud kind of settled, and I know it's me. I just remember I looked back towards my team sergeant. Hey, I'm hit. And then I started panicking because I didn't know what was going on. I mean, as weird as it sounds, but no one's ready to look down and see hamburger leg, you know? And so I started panicking, and we were in a situation where there was IEDs all over the place. And so he couldn't directly get to me because, I mean, there was no one to clear the, when guys hit IEDs, majority of the time you got to slow down and it sucks. It's really hard. I've dealt with it a lot, but you have to slow everything down and then you get security and then you clear up to the casualty. Because there's one IED, there's five. That's our saying. The Taliban, or correction, the enemy rarely uses just one IED. Where there's one, there's five.
Right.
And so predicament. Yeah.
Yeah. This is going through your head and you're laying there. Your team wants to help, but they got to secure the situation. And I love how, like, you're literally explaining this in the book and what's going through your head. You know that they can't come right away, but all these things are going through your heads because you're feeling yourself hanging on for dear life and you're wondering what's going to happen next and where is this going to go. You're still talking to us today. So thank God. And we appreciate, the care of everybody from that moment until now, but getting you out of there was just the first step of a long chain of events. You know, what happened after they immediately secured you and got you out of there?
So once they got me out and we could actually find an HLZ where the helicopter could land because of the IED threat and the Taliban, they were on ICOM, which is their radios. They were on ICOM saying, hey, we're going to ambush these guys. They were celebrating that I got hit. I'll never forget them cheering over the radio that I got hit. So they finally got me on the bird and got me to TK, which was Terran Kaut. That was the first, I want to say it was a Roll 3. But they got me to TK, and that's when everything really, started to come to. People were rushing out to get a hold of me, cutting clothes off. The panic of this guy is messed up. We gotta get him back there.
You were still with it enough to ask them to not cut something off, weren't you?
So what I remember is a nurse came out and they started cutting, and I had my Lucky Oregon Ducks t-shirt on and she wanted to cut it off. And I remember trying to fight her for it. And finally a doctor came out and he's like, hey man, I don't mean to be the party pooper here, but look at your leg. How lucky is that shirt?
Right.
And he like, we're cutting it off. And then I was like, okay, cut it off. And
yeah.
So for the audience who are mainly physical therapist assistants and students, you know, we're going to bring an image on the screen. So this is not immediately after, no images from immediately after, but this was from how long after the initial blast, then we can talk about what actually happened in terms from a rehab situation. So how long after the explosion was this image taken?
I could, you know, obviously be off, but I think it was at least 3 weeks after, maybe sooner. I know Johnny Owens, he would have a better idea, but it was a little while after, cause they had a hard time getting me out of Afghanistan cause I wasn't stable enough to fly. So,
okay. So let's take a look at this. Wow. So I think, you know, what you had said earlier was, this didn't sound like or feel like the movies. And I think when you see explosions in the movies, a lot of times you don't really see this. They keep this out of the movies. And the reason we wanted to share this image is this is what this looked like. If you're working with people with traumatic injuries, that's a traumatic injury. So walk us through, you know, what happened to your leg from this explosive device.
So what I remember is, basically, when I was laying on the ground, my boot was at a 90-degree angle to my leg. And when I lifted my – when I grabbed behind my knee to lift my leg up and get a better look, I don't – I'll try and detail it out the best I can, but my boot just flopped off to the side. And so I was like, oh, well, that's – you know, I'm not a doctor, but that's not right. So basically, what I gathered from it, well after the fact, but the blast wave went up through my foot and it exited at my calf. So it blew my tib and my fib out. But when it blew my fib out, my fib took a pretty good amount of meat with it. And so in the next picture, you'll see like there's a lot more open. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Let's see if we can get that on the screen as well. So you were immediately brought to a hospital not long after that, or, you know, evacuated as quickly as you could. Wow. Yeah. That's the lateral right side of your leg. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, credit to your team for making sure you were stable, you know, that you survived this, in the immediacy, to making sure the scene was secure and getting you where you needed to go. But wow, those are some injuries, man.
Yeah, that's, I'd rather not go through that again, but.
So I don't want to give too much away from the book, Tip of the Spear. You should check that out. We've got the link in the comments on Facebook for you to grab that. It's a great read of a story. So congrats for you for putting that together, being an author. But most people would become, you know, if they're injured like this to that level, what happens
to you? Well, a lot of people that get injured to that level, they medically retire from there. And then whatever path they choose after medical retirement, some people will stick around, but deployments are, that's really not going to happen. Not with an injury like that. So, but majority of the time, injury like that is immediate. You're going to be medically retired. You're done.
So. But not for you. I mean, you had a lot of people close to you, you know, family, friends, I'm imagining. You had, you know, people, you know, you were taken. And how did you come across path with Johnny? I want to talk about that for a second.
So in the beginning, I was medically retired, but I fought to stay on active duty through a continue on active duty waiver. And but how Johnny came into my life, I love that dude. So the CFI, oh, well, correction. So when I finally got out of the hospital and I was able to move over to, I don't know what you'd call it, like the permanent physical therapy dorms or whatever. Yeah. And so, I remember I first started going to physical therapy. I'd put a couple of fentanyl lollipops in and I would wheel over there and just like flop around like an idiot because, well, I'm high as a kite and I basically just had a leg reattached, but it was cool. But I met Johnny through pain. Johnny knew what my goal was. My goal was So when I was still in the hospital, my sergeant major, commander, and all those guys came out, and they're, you know, we had to talk and everything like that. And I said, you know, basically what every soldier says, I need to get back to the fight. I need to get back to my team. And my sergeant major told me probably the most dangerous thing he could have said. He said, if you can rehab and clear, you'll go back to Afghanistan. So, well, okay. So I know a lot of people, they basically, hey man, you fought your fight, you served your country, like take care of yourself. You don't need to go back, but not Johnny. Johnny's is in the business of getting guys back to the fight. Helping guys, you know, just live or just, I don't know, survive. Johnny is the, you know, his job is to get guys back into the fight, get guys to overcome. And I will put it to you this way. It is not easy. Johnny beat the crap out of me. And it was awesome because I recovered in very quick time. From flash to bang, September 12th, 2010, I was back to my company in November 2000, 2011. Yep. And then so, back in Afghanistan, March 2012.
From this to back to duty in that short amount of time.
Yeah, all because of Johnny. Yep.
I mean, did it shock everybody completely?
I don't think I shocked Johnny because he knows if you put in the work and you give him everything you got, he will make it happen. And then also, you know, with Ryan Blanek in the IDEO brace, it gave so many guys second chances and to get back into the fight. But it's not a give me. You're going to give them some pain.
A lot of more details in the book, Tip of the Spear. Want to make sure people pick that up. It's just a good story, but I want to talk about one thing, like what you really considered your test when you were back, because right now you're in a plywood building. You're somewhere overseas right now, right?
Yeah.
So we know that there's an ending, but you had really your first test, and I think it was even testing you, and that was Hilltop 2000.
Yep. Yeah, Hilltop 2000, back in 2012, our mission was to basically, I want to say it was 1,500 feet in elevation gain in like a click. So it's basically almost straight up. Hilltop 2000, the command element needed to get overwatch of a major clearance operation that was happening in a valley in Afghanistan. This valley was just known for Taliban, basically running guns and everything else, fighters and whatnot. So we infilled in 24 hours prior to the clearance op, and we started going up this mountain. And we had the command team with us. Not only did we have the command team, but we had my command sergeant major, Brian Reary, who was the one at my hospital bed who said, if you can get cleared, I'll send you back to Afghanistan. So I had to, and that was the first major test I had for my leg, was climbing that mountain in 80 pounds of gear. And then helping other guys get to the top as they were basically, I guess I don't want to sound like an ass, but failing. And right. So we, you know, it's combat. There's no room for you can't fail. What you do is you put your teammate on your back and you Charlie Mike. So.
And that was the sentiment, right? You talked about some people actually, you know, saying it right to your face, because there's no room to hide. And I think you highlighted that when you're on a team, especially a special forces team, you know, there's no extra guy, there's no extra piece of equipment that you can kind of ditch, or a guy that can just kind of slack off for a little bit. Everybody has their job and needs to do it. And you literally being the tip of the spear, a lot of times you're out front and they've got to make sure the guys next to you, some of them are questioning, is this guy who went through this injury going to be able to do that? And I think Hilltop 2000 proved more than that.
It did. If I struggled on Hilltop 2000, 2012 would have been my last deployment. That's it. And I wasn't, they were not going to see me struggle. I refused to struggle. And Hilltop 2000, I think is where I really, I understood how limited your mind can be. And when you feel like this is all I have, you've only reached the beginning of your potential. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was a great story, a great testament. And right now, how long have you been deployed right now in this current deployment, Ryan?
I've been out here for 7 months now.
Wow. After reading your story and tip of the spear, after hearing your experiences, want to say it again. Thank you so much for your service, you and your teammates. Last night I slept in a place that was real warm and safe. And I did that because there's women and men like yourself who are, sleeping in places that are not as warm and not as safe. So thank you for doing that. I got to ask a question because you talked about what the military did do for you in terms of letting you see a large portion of the world, Central America, going over to the Middle East, going over to Asia. Best place to have a beer? Where would you suggest anywhere in the world since you've traveled about in the military? Where do you like to go?
Oh, wow. Best place in the world to have a beer, Thailand.
Yeah. You talked about that a little bit. Just opening my eyes to different places that I wouldn't mind getting around. Ryan, what's the one thing you want people to take away from your book, Tip of the Spear? And we'll say it's pointed directly at physical therapists. Is there an overarching message? Because you talked about your mindset as a patient, which I think was terribly important. But what's one thing you'd want to make sure PTs and PTAs hold near?
I think the one thing that PTs need to understand is that the work that you're doing, it's not, you're not just working on a patient or a client or anything like that. You're changing lives, and you're getting guys back into the fight, regardless of what fight that is. The physical therapy world, you really do. I mean, if the person will give you what is required to get back into the fight, you're giving that person a second chance. And so as with any job, times can get mundane or regimented, but again, you're giving that guy a second chance, or that girl, excuse me, that guy or girl a second chance. You're getting people back into the fight, regardless of what fight it is, they're getting back into the fight. And that is extremely important.
Yeah. You mentioned it was part of your identity. You didn't know where you would go if you were injured and you were medically discharged. This is who I am. I've been this my whole life. Question from the audience, Casey Klein. How did you and the rehab team approach this mentally, outside of the fentanyl lollipops, which I think is something on the outside? But how did you approach it mentally between pushing through and allowing you to rest, this balance of doing a lot, but maybe not too much?
Johnny knew all I had to do was to give Johnny 100%. And he knew when I was supposed to rest. He knew when I was supposed to drive. He knew, one more rep, or, hey, you're pushing too hard or whatnot. Listen to the professionals and give them everything you got. Even if it's, hey, you need to go get rest, give it everything you got. And that's how we approached it.
What was it about Johnny that made a connection? Because we talk about this term therapeutic alliance, which really we can tell. I mentioned Johnny and your face just kind of lit up, right? So that means you guys have a strong therapeutic alliance. What was it that formed that bond? Because that was actually another theme throughout your book, Tip of the Spear, was bond, the bond with your teammates and the guys you're going through training with in Q school. So what was it about that bond that made you say, I'm gonna listen to whatever this guy says. I'm going to give everything this therapist says 110%.
I was a human being to him, and he believed in me, and you could tell he believed in you. He didn't check the box or tell you what you have to tell. No. He legitimately believed in me. And it wasn't just me. It was everybody at the CFI that he worked with. that's what it takes to be successful, in my opinion. I mean, I've never been through the physical therapy world as a student, but in my mind, what it takes to be successful is you're working with humans. And if you're in the medical career field, then one of the things that I really saw throughout my time at Brooks Army Medical Center and in the CFI was people were legitimately, you know, these are soldiers, or these are humans, or, and these guys' lives, they've just been completely changed, ripped to shreds. Now we're going to put these guys back together, and we're going to get them the quality of life, you know, that as human beings, Johnny, you know, not just because I'm a soldier, but as a human being, Johnny wanted to give me back to what I wanted. And so, yeah, I was a human to Johnny, and not just a number or a case or anything like that.
Yeah. So many times the basic stuff is seen as simple, and the basics are not simple. But love how you frame that, which is exactly why you had that great therapeutic alliance with Johnny Owens, and want to give him a nod for sharing the book. And it is out now, Tip of the Spear. Ryan, we're going to do something we do on the show. We do it every time. It is called Three Questions. Are you ready for three questions?
Yes.
Let's do it. Three questions from our friends at Aureus Medical Staffing. Find them online at AURUSmedical.com. Leaders in travel physical therapy all around the country, not just outpatient orthopedics. Do what you want to do, which is be a great therapist, connecting with humans where you want to do it. So check out what they have available now for you to go do it. AURUSmedical.com. People ask all the time, wow, they probably don't have places that I'd want to go. Well, if there are people there, we need to make it a connection with a human, as Ryan just said. You got to make a connection. If there are people, they need therapists. So check them online at AURUSmedical.com. You can also travel with a travel buddy. Doesn't have to be another therapist. The nursing placements, allied health. So check them out, AURUSmedical.com. Question number one, Ryan. You've been around the world. You also been around the country. Where is somewhere that you think the audience should go in the 50 U.S. states? Somewhere great that the audience needs to visit, that maybe it's not on the off the beaten path.
Riggins, Idaho.
Okay, what's so special? Tell us about Riggins.
Riggins, Idaho is like a scene out of a book. It's just, there's mountains, the Snake River, valleys. It's absolutely amazing. So Riggins, Idaho, or Lowell, Oregon. Lowell, Oregon is a small little town surrounded by three lakes and big trees, and it is an outdoors paradise.
I like it. Don't threaten me with a good time. Question number two on three questions. What's something you've read or watched or listened to that you think the audience could get value from? Outside of your book, Tip of the Spear, obviously, it's a good one.
Read or watched or listened to that the audience can get value from.
Yeah, something you learned from.
I would have to say
do you read any other stories leading up to writing to kind of model this after? Any stories or any movies like that that told similar stories?
So if you want to see the most realistic Afghanistan documentary I've ever seen before, that would be Bravo 2 Kilo. And from the physical therapy standpoint, you could see lives changed by IEDs. It's a British infantry unit, and they get stuck in a IED a minefield, and multiple guys step on IEDs through there. And so I would say that has probably molded me the most when it comes to my line of work. Other than, you know, I guess the inspiration as far as writing is just not not becoming a victim of your of life's circumstances, because life can be hard.
No, that's
but
great.
You own those circumstances, and you don't let it own you. You'd be fine.
Yeah, great insight. I mean, if you're saying that that particular movie is realistic, we'll take that as somebody who's been there and can say that. So, third question is, who is someone the audience should know more about? Who's someone who does great work but maybe flies under the radar?
So, there's actually quite a few people in my life that I could point out for that. One of them is, you know, obviously Johnny Owens, Ryan Blahnik. He created the IDEO brace. The whole reason why I had another 6 deployments to Afghanistan since getting blown up. Dr. Shu, an orthopedic surgeon, I'm still here.
Yeah, and you talk about all the people in the book.
Yep, but then I think a lot of people that fly underneath the radar are the physical therapists and the occupational therapists and the athletic trainers that we have, like Dana at 7th Group and Paul at 7th Group and Tamara at 7th Group. Their entire job with the Thor 3 program is to get guys back to the fight. That's their life revolves around that. And it's amazing. I mean, I don't want to give out last names, but these guys are, guys as in guys and girls, but they're amazing. They're amazing, and they are, like, they definitely change lives. So, and physical therapy, occupational therapy, all of that to get people back to the fight, whatever your fight is.
Perfect. Well said. Yeah, and you go into detail in that that Thor program and talk about that in the book Tip of the Spear. So people can learn a little bit more about that. Ryan, last thing we do is the parting shot. Parting Shot is brought to you by the Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy. Find them online at orthopt.org. If you're looking to enhance your orthopedic skills as a physical therapist, why not do it with the leaders in orthopedic PT? The leaders are in the Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy, orthopt.org. You can find some educational listings there as well. Current concepts of orthopt, the leading OCS prep course, running athlete and tissue tolerance just released, with more on the way in 2020. And 2021. Ryan, the parting shot is your last chance as we wrap up this episode and your story. The mic drop moment. What's something you'd want the audience to remember and take away from your well-written book and your story, Tip of the Spear?
The biggest thing that, you know, I want the audience to take away, and not just the audience, but to also spread the word on, is basically the theme of my book. And that is, victimization is it. It's a mindset, but it's a choice. And it's, you can choose to become a victim. You can choose to make your injury or your circumstance a part of you, and you can be that injury and never move on from it. Or you can choose to own it. You can use that injury, circumstance, or hiccup in life to make you stronger, make you a better person. And by owning it and you know, enhancing your life, you're also going to enhance the people around you. It's just inevitable. So
yeah,
that would be my biggest, I guess, message is, refuse to become a victim of circumstance, because life is full of them.
Yeah, I love that. Well said. Anybody else you want to say thanks to that you didn't get a chance to today that have helped you in your recovery?
Yeah. So not just my recovery, but writing that book was recovery. And so I want to thank, you know, Mike Yorkie and Greg Johnson, because without those two guys, that book wouldn't be here right now.
All right. Wherever books, yeah. Anybody else you want to mention?
Yeah. Family, but occupational therapist who is really close and near, dear to me, my wife. So, I want to thank her for not letting me feel too sorry for myself. because I'm good at it.
Well done. Well, check it out right now. It is wherever great books are sold. Tip of the Spear, the incredible story of an injured Green Beret's return to battle. Ryan Hendrickson, thank you so much for just giving us a little taste. If you listen to this episode, it's just a little taste, a lot more in that book. So make sure to check it out. Link is available in the comments. Ryan, thanks so much for talking with us today. And thanks again for your service and doing what you do, my man.
Man, I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate what you guys do because, again, you guys get guys back to the fight.
All right, Ryan. Thanks so much, man.
All right. Thank you.
Love the PT Pinecast?
Yes. Yes.
Support the show by telling a friend or by leaving a review on iTunes or Google Play.
All right. Show today brought to you by the Brooks Institute of Higher Learning, an innovator in providing advanced post-professional education. Brooks IHL offering continuing education courses in numerous specialty areas, 6 PT residency programs, an OMPT fellowship, as well as challenging but rewarding internships. The IHL specializes in the translation of information from evidence to patient management. Learn what they can do for you to support your professional development at brooksihl.org.
Our home on the internet.
PTPintcast.com.
Created by BuildPT. BuildPT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
to providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what BuildPT can do for you today
at BuildPT.com.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC.
It's poured fresh by me,
physical therapist Jimmy McKay.
Ingredients are sourced by our chief connections officer,
Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
And it's brewed fresh by producer and physical therapist
Juliet Dassinger.
And by producer and creator, second-year PT student
Bridget Nolan from Sacred Heart University.
PT Pintcast is a podcast that saves physical therapists from missing out on amazing insight, remarkable ideas, and motivational stories.
Make sure to follow us online
at PT Pintcast and
subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts.
I absolutely love
it. I love you, love you, love you.
It's awesome.
Thanks so much for listening. And if you found value in the show, all we ask
is that you tell a friend.
This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.